Thanks for downloading this podcast of The Cosmo on RTE Pulse. For more information, check out rte.ie/pulse or find us on Facebook.
It's RTE Pulse. RTE Pulse.
The Cosmo with Scott the Butler. Radio for Ireland's gay and lesbian community.
That's right, you are listening to The Cosmo with myself, Scott Butler, live here on RTE Pulse. If you want to get in touch with us tonight, you can easily do so by sending us a tweet. It's at Scott Butler or at RTE Cosmo. And of course, if you're on Facebook as well, it's facebook.com/ RTE Cosmo. Now, about 2 weeks ago, we were talking to Ruth McCarty. She was the festival director of the Outburst Queer Arts Festival that is taking place this Friday, or at least it's kicking off this Friday in Belfast. Wonderful events, all taking place across the city. And we decided that, considering it was 2 weeks ago that we played the interview, it was a bit too early, especially if you're maybe thinking about where to go for this weekend, or indeed for next week in Belfast, if you're heading out, and if you want to find out a bit more about the festival. So we decided on the show tonight that we'd replay or repeat the interview that we did with Ruth McCarty. So as we were chatting 2 weeks ago anyway, I started off by asking her, what was the festival about, and indeed who were the people behind it? So see what you think.
Really, the festival, the way we like the festival to be is, it's kind of, we like to support and encourage local creativity from any level, but we also like to bring in work from abroad that's really inspiring and that's really, really, really excellent quality. So we have everything from, you know, the likes of Baby D and Little Annie, who work with Anthony and the Johnsons and Mark Almond doing a concert in the Black Box, to, you know, acting out from Dublin, your community theatre group there coming up to do their Gay Dads play, and, you know, have a discussion off the back of that about community theatre, which is really exciting. You know, and then we have like local community groups putting on events, like the Belfast Feminist Network are putting on a series, a whole day of events around what it means to be lesbian and feminist for a whole new generation of women. That's really exciting. And then we'll have things like in the MAC, which is like the premier theatre venue in Belfast now. We've got a world premiere play, The Trouble with Harry, which is by the Australian playwright Lachlan Philpott, who's probably the most exciting playwright in Australia at the moment. And we've got his world premiere of that play at the MAC, and you know, we've got 4 days of new queer cinema in the middle of the festival, including the Northern Ireland premiere of Blue is the Warmest Colour, which of course won the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year, and the wonderful Amy LeMay is putting on our fantastic closing night event Show Off, which is going to be some of the best performers in the UK and Ireland at the moment, including Pony Dance, the amazing Scotty, who was Time Out's Performer of the Year last year, and Bryony Kimmings, who was the Fringe First Award winner at Edinburgh this year. So it really, it's just a mad range of things that allows people to kind of get involved and perform and, you know, do their thing, but also brings in work that is of exceptional quality and good crack as well, you know.
It sounds absolutely amazing, really. Like the amount of variety and even diversity to the programme this year alone is really, really fascinating. You mentioned involvement, though, earlier on. And, you know, how are people able to get involved, whether it's maybe with an idea for an event, or even if they just want to take part with the event, with the festival, I mean. Are there volunteers with the festival, or is it something that just rolls on?
They're volunteer. I mean, you know, I'm kind of the only worker as such on the festival, and we have a lot of people that come to us and go, listen, can I do this? I have this idea for a club night, or, you know, I have this idea that I, you know, I'd like to do a workshop on this. And we really throw it open. I mean, the festival is programmed. We have a small team of programmers who look for the best work from abroad, and we look at people who are doing interesting things locally and try and say to them, look, do you want to create something specifically for the festival? But we throw it wide open. We have a whole section of the program which is, what would you like to do? And what we'll try to do is create a space for people to come and do. Like one of our opening night performer, Ross Anderson Doherty, is somebody who's been in who's been involved with Outburst since the very beginning. He used to run the gay choir here, but who's a tremendous performer. And over the last couple of years, he's done our opening night and has developed tremendously as an artist. So it's about fostering that talent. But we're really open all year round to finding new talent, to encouraging people. It's a political act. We're quite a political festival, but what we say is we're political and we dance afterwards. You know, it's like, we want politics to be relevant to people and with a small p. And it's like, what does it mean in your life to be queer?
Right.
Who's telling you how to be and how do you really want to be? And tell us different ways of being that. For example, you know, trans issues, you know, the T gets thrown into the LGBT an awful lot, and actually a lot of the time T isn't very much included. And I've been very conscious of that because there's really like an emerging politic now around trans and genderqueer stuff in Northern Ireland for the first time in terms of organised groups. And we've got a very exciting project this year, which is we're using bus stop advertising space as an exhibition that explores trans identity.
Wow.
And we're going to be, there's going to be like images of trans people as they see themselves rather than what we expect trans people to look like in terms of the cliches and the ideas. And that's come from a collaboration between the Gender Essence group in Belfast, which is the trans group, and Ramsey, who's a local photographer. So we've worked, you know, so we create events a lot. We look for, where is work not being done? Because the community groups here do amazing work, but they can't do everything. They're trying to change laws. They're trying to, you know, get marriage equality. They're trying to get the blood ban overturned. What we do is we fill the gaps. Where's the conversation that needs to be had now to move us forward? And how can we do that in a way that's really interesting to watch, that's really engaging, and we'll just get people talking about stuff? We want people to go to events and go to the pub afterwards or go home or whatever and have conversations with each other about queer identity beyond mainstream gay culture.
Yes, of course.
And beyond what we talk about regularly in gay circles and what we consider gay culture to be, because gay culture has changed so much and the different identities within gay culture, and we really like to create space for exploring all those different facets of being gay or queer or whatever way you want to identify yourself, and instead have a lot of crack while we're doing it, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I think especially that point about the bus stops, I think that's a fantastic idea, and it really engages with the public in some ways without them even realising it or having to necessarily go to any particular venue. No, so
you know, it's a really lovely thing, because when we look at advertising space all the time, we're passing images of people that are like very body normative or very, you know, very specific look. And all of a sudden, like, there's one of the images that I find really striking, which is Kira, who's one of the main people in the Gender Essence group. And she has her wig off. And because she transitioned very late in life, she's bald. And she said she hates wearing a wig.
Wow.
It's not who she is. Mm. So there's an amazing image of her in her dress, sitting there with her wig, cradling her wig in her lap, and she's quite bald. And it's such a striking image. And I know that there'll be people walking down the street that won't even notice that, but then go, what? And it will start a conversation, and that's what we're trying to do, is start a conversation with people.
Excellent. Well, listen, it sounds, once again, like an absolutely fantastic festival, and I can't wait to go up and see a bit of it myself. Ruth, if anyone wants to find out more about the various individual events, where can they go on to?
If you go onto our website, www.outburstarts.com, all of the events will be up there and how you can get tickets and everything. And also join our Facebook. Outburst Arts is our Facebook, or Twitter, we're at Outburst Arts, because we do a lot of updates there and can let you know about ticketing. But people can also interact about the events, and that's what we really like as well.
Excellent. All right, well, listen, we'll leave it there for the moment anyway. Ruth, thank you so much for coming on to the show tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure, and best of luck with the festival. Now, recently in the news, there's been a bit of a startling fact that over the last few years, there's been a 33% increase in diagnoses of gonorrhea in the Republic of Ireland. To tell us a bit more about why this should be so alarming to you, we have Dr. Shea Keating, who runs his own surgery at the Harold's Cross Clinic in Dublin, and also is an associate specialist of sexual health and HIV. He's in studio with me at the moment. Dr. Shea Keating, you're very welcome along.
Thank you for having me here, Scott.
No problem at all. So this is, as I said, a slightly startling piece of information that has come about. First of all, why exactly should people be worried about this revelation?
Well, can I just bring it back just to say why we know there's an increase?
Okay.
Gonorrhea is an infection, as we know, and a lot of infections are what we call notifiable infections, notifiable diseases.
Right.
And the Health Protection Surveillance Centre in the HSE collate data that they receive from doctors when certain infections are diagnosed. Okay. And doctors have a statutory obligation to report certain infections, and gonorrhea is one of them. So you're right. In 2012, there were 817 cases of gonorrhea identified and reported to the HPSC. And in 2011, there were 613, which, as you pointed out, represents a 33% increase.
Just in terms of notifiable diseases, why exactly would some diseases be notifiable and that you'd have to let the authorities know, and others aren't?
Yeah, well, from a public health point of view, you want to know if there's an increase in certain illnesses. Say, for argument's sake, if there was an increase in certain infections that might cause diarrhoea and that could be passed on from hand to mouth. We need to know about these. You need to alert the public at large to these, and obviously gonorrhea is one of them.
With this increase, it is slightly alarming, but has there been any documentation to show why this is the case?
Well, I think gonorrhea, as we know, is a sexually transmitted infection. So there are certain things that might account for this increase. The first thing is where the increase is most evident. And I think, again, in gay men, like, there is an increase in gonorrhea. There's also a big increase in young heterosexuals who are being exposed to gonorrhea, and that's what we're seeing in clinics. Young heterosexuals coming in under the age of 25, by and large, these are the two main groups that are becoming infected with gonorrhea. Now, I think one of the reasons we might be seeing an increase is the actual tests we have. These tests are improving all the time, and the ability of these tests to pick up gonorrhea is getting better and better. So that may account for part of the increase. The second thing is, there is a lot of risk-taking going on at the moment, a lot of unprotected sex happening around the country. And I should point out at this stage that the big increase we see is in the Dublin Mid-Leinster area. It's in Dublin, it's in Kildare, and it's in Wicklow. So it's centred around the capital region. So it is very problematic. And I suppose historically people are going to snigger and think about gonorrhea and say, the clap, just no big deal. But actually it is a very big deal, and it's a very big deal for a couple of reasons. Number one, if a woman is exposed to gonorrhea and it's not treated, she can develop pelvic inflammatory disease, and that can result in a long-term infertility, which is a major, major issue for a woman.
Of course.
For a man with untreated gonorrhea, he can develop chronic proctitis. If he's a gay man, he can develop chronic prostatitis, inflammation of the prostate.
Okay.
But another reason for it to be aware or to be alarmed by the increase in gonorrhea is when somebody has gonorrhea and they've inflammation in the genital tract, there automatically is an increase in their susceptibility to HIV infection.
Okay.
HIV will get through membranes that are broken way more easily than it will get through intact membranes. So if you have damage to the lining of your genital tract, you're going to increase the chance of you getting HIV from a sexual exposure. That's number one. Number two, if somebody is HIV positive and they are doing well on the medication, they're what we call in medical circles virally suppressed, or the undetectable amount of virus in the blood. If they develop a sexually transmitted infection like gonorrhea, the chances that they have locally an increased viral load in the genital secretions can occur. So unbeknownst to themselves, they might be increasing the chance of them passing on HIV to their sexual partners.
Okay, so obviously, as you've described, it can lead to much more serious situations. That's not saying that it isn't a serious situation to start off with. The easiest way for people to protect themselves, obviously, is a condom and people start practicing safe sex. But amongst the younger generations, that doesn't seem to be getting through. That message doesn't seem to be getting through at all. What is the main challenge that you see from your side as a doctor of trying to get the word across?
Well, unfortunately, we have to just keep hammering the safer sex message home. At the moment, there's no way of avoiding gonorrhea if you don't use protection. So it is very highly infectious from a sexual health point of view. If you're exposed, the incubation period can be anything from 2 to 12 days. The average around is 5 to 6 days.
Okay.
So that's when patients are going to develop symptoms. For men, we have an obvious advantage. We can look down, and by and large, in 90% of the cases, we will see something wrong. Women, unfortunately, don't have that advantage. Women with gonorrhea, only 50% of those would know they have it.
Okay, now, that's interesting.
I mentioned earlier on that the kind of long-term sequelae of infection with gonorrhea can be prostatitis or pelvic inflammatory disease. We also have to remember that gonorrhea can also cause problems with the skin, the joints. It can cause heart problems. So somebody can actually have gonorrhea that travels to the heart and cause damage to the heart valves.
Now, that's fascinating, because that's something that wouldn't have even crossed my mind.
Absolutely. And do you know that gonorrhea can also cause meningitis?
No,
absolutely. So these are very, very serious. They're obviously not common sequelae, but they're very serious.
It's absolutely fascinating, the topic, especially the idea that, you know, I guess when most people think of, you know, sexually related diseases, that it stays localised. But the idea now that it actually doesn't at all, that it can reach as far as your heart or even elsewhere, is a bit alarming. Now, this is one of the, I guess, the few ailments that are in this category where symptoms are or can be visible. Definitely much more for the man. For, as you said yourself, for a woman, it's more kind of 50% chance that you might be able to see something.
Yeah.
What is the quickest thing for them to do? Or what is the easiest thing for them to do?
I think if you're sexually active, and particularly if you're not in a monogamous relationship, the best thing to do is get a regular STI screening. Now, I know it's not always ideal. It can be quite difficult to access, particularly, you know, if you don't have the money to pay for it privately. But it is very, very important that you know your sexual health status. And particularly if you have multiple sex partners, you need to get checked. Because you might in yourself be infected, but the problem is you may be passing it on to people who are more susceptible.
Okay. And on the, in the unfortunate case, if someone out there listening to this does think that they might have gonorrhea, what's the course of treatment, or indeed, how long does it take before they're hopefully healed?
The treatment at the moment is good. We have at our disposal an antibiotic that we can give by intramuscular injection, and we have an oral antibiotic to take in conjunction with the injection. And it does work very, very well at the moment. But I'd be mindful that may change.
Excellent. All right. Well, listen, this is obviously a category that we'll be talking about many times on the programme from here on out. But in the meantime, Dr. Shay Keating, thank you so much.
Thanks a million, Scott.
And also in studio, we have Paul Strecker, who is involved with the Harold's Cross surgery. Paul, if anyone wants to find out a bit more information on the various ailments, or indeed if they want to book an appointment with the surgery, how can they do so?
They can telephone myself. I'm the practice manager of Harold's Cross surgery for Dr. Keating. They can telephone me on 087-234-555. That's Monday through to Friday, except for Wednesday, from 9 in the morning until 9 in the evening.
Excellent. All right. Well, Paul and Shay, thank you so much for coming
here. Thanks a lot, Scott. Thank you.